Welcome back to the Boundary Corner Podcast. My name is Curtis Wilson, along with my co-host,
Ryan Siegler. What's up, buddy? How you been?
Oh, buddy, I've had an absolutely wonderful weekend, man.
Big birthday.
Big birthday weekend. Yes, sir, man. Took off Friday. Kind of thought I wasn't going to do anything but just chill around the house. Brother-in-law hits me up. Hey, let's go play a round of golf. I'm like, hey, if your mom can watch the oldest, hell yeah. She was obliged to that. So went out to Sycamore Creek and played around, shot 100.
Hey.
Drove the ball beautifully. Just like was clicking, was putting great. The iron and the chipping game, not so great.
Might as well left your irons at home then.
Yeah, should have left the irons at home.
Just putted it all in.
He should have putted it
driving putt.
Exactly. But it was still, you know, shot 100. And looking at the four blow-up holes where either the irons were terrible or the chipping was terrible, probably feel like I could have got a 95, which would have been maybe my best round ever, man. And then Friday night, did some hibachi takeout, which was money. Had baseball yesterday. Got a few more games of that left. Ooh. And just a little Greek dinner with the neighbors on Saturday night, man. So very low key. Oh, wifey hit it out the ballpark. She has officially got me a beer fridge for the cave.
There you go. The cycle is complete.
The cycle is complete. Like, you know, there's really, I mean, if anybody ever gets kicked out of their house, feel free to reach out to me. I have a place you can rent. No access to stoves, but, you know, TVs.
Bring cooker. A hot plate.
Exactly. Microwave. How about you, man? How was your weekend?
It was low key, man, and I really enjoyed it pretty much. We just kind of hung out on Friday and Saturday, and we went over to the neighbors tonight for dinner. Had some surf and turf, had some New York strips and crab cakes.
Ooh,
yeah,
very nice.
Oh yeah,
very nice. Your wifey school tomorrow? No.
Oh yeah.
Same.
What about yours? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Same. Back to it. So, yeah. Yeah.
Sarah's doing all the trainings right now with her new job, so she's keeping busy getting everyone acclimated technology-wise for all these new hybrid class situations that's happening in the elementary and middle school and all that. So it's going to be an adventure, but she's doing really well with it. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely an adventure for them. Definitely something different. Tomorrow night we have another baseball game, so my wife probably won't be able to expunge the day one grievances until about 9 tomorrow night. So, you know, you get prepped. You know, our wives have been teaching long enough, though, that first week it's there's you we're good husbands. You sit there, you listen.
Oh yeah.
And you don't say anything. So
you have the ear, and then you know, hey, that's great, honey. Here's some wine.
Exactly. All right. Well, guys, we have a ton of stuff to cover today. Been a few days. We were going to record last week. But, you know, life gets in the way between birthdays and wives working and wives back to school nights. We missed our opportunity. It is what it is. So we have a ton of stuff to cover. Brian, let's kind of go back quite a few days now, which feels a long time. And that would be for Cannon Boone committing, the offensive tackle, 6'4", 280 out of Dickinson, Texas. I know this guy, you happy.
Yeah, big time, dude. So I was watching this guy's tape. This is continuing the trend we've seen with guys that Vice is trying to bring in. Guys that really, at the high school level, already know how to run block and do it well. This guy shows good promise with reaching, getting to the next level in blocking, showed a few powers where he was leading up in the hole. So, I mean, this guy can do a lot of different things from the tackle position. I'm not sure if he's going to end up tackle or guard for us, but I think he could probably do both, you know, depending on how he shows out his first year or two here. But I really like his tape. I think he's going to be a really good acquisition for us. And, you know, Vice continues to find these diamonds in the rough here as the cycle closes out after, you know, missing on a couple more high profile guys at the start of the cycle.
Yeah. Now you talk about being diamond in the rough. I don't think I can consider him a diamond in the rough. He's an 87. So he is that other side, high three. He's already kind of built. He's a top 60 offensive tackle. You kind of start doing the math. You need two offensive tackles. That means essentially others one side or the other. He's a top 30 tackle. You know, his commitment list kind of unusual. Arizona, Colorado, Purdue. Excuse me, not commitment list, but his offer list. You know, Air Force, a few other schools like that. So he was getting some attention from your mid P5 schools. Also some, you know, some Houstons, your Navies. So solid offer list. Now, Brian, you mentioned you could see him guard or tackle. Now, if he goes tackle, is he left or is he right?
If he goes tackle, he's probably going to be right tackle.
Okay.
But, I mean, the tape I'm seeing on him as far as pass blocking, it's good. He needs to clean up some technique, which I think Vice is really good at teaching. So I think that's not a big problem. And like I said, Vice seems to be one to find guys that are already pretty polished from a run blocking standpoint, may need to clean up technique, but really know how to get after it, have the mean streak and have those intangibles that you need to be a good run blocker. And he's going to, you know, kind of polish up that, that pass pro. So like I said, I think he would slot in pretty good at right tackle. But going back to the diamond in the rough thing, I mean, yeah, you're talking about top 60, but again, this is a guy from Texas, and kind of sometimes, you know, once you fall out of a certain number in that state, you all of a sudden get kind of lost in the shuffle there a little bit. And I feel like that's kind of what happened to this guy.
Okay, I got what you mean by that. That certain states where if you start slipping past 60, 70 in some of the bigger, more talent-rich states, you kind of lose the eyes because I think me and you talked what he would be 17. If he was in the state of Virginia, he would be 17. Yeah. So a top 20 here, he's 105 there. So clearly, I got what you're saying by that. Brian, the delay and all the crap happening in our lives last week, I actually was able to sneak this one in.
Yeah.
The third-team All-American by Phil Steele, Illinois State cornerback Devin Taylor gets in the portal, transfers to Virginia Tech, 6'1", 200 pounds.
This is a coup.
Did we just steal somebody? And not for 1 year, but 2 years.
Yeah, this is a coup because this is a guy that was getting draft buzz going into this year. You know, one of the best cornerbacks at the FCS level last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just see all of a sudden he's in the portal because of everything going on with all these other schools. And, you know, we need a corner after yes, Caleb opted out. And this is a guy that come in, he's probably going to be talent-wise two or three on our roster in terms of talent. So, you know, right out the gate, that's a big acquisition. And looking at some of his tape, he played really well against North Dakota State. And then he had a clips of him going against Antonio Brown.
Who? Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
Essentially, if he wasn't out of his mind, the best wide out in the NFL.
Yeah, no big deal.
Shit. I did not see that. So you were breaking some news to me here. I mean, and I look at the guy and look at some of his stats last year, 24 pass defended. I mean, that's like almost, that's over 1.5 a game. 9 interceptions in his career. I mean, it is a coup. And if clearly, you know, he's going to have to catch up on some camp stuff. But, you know, we're going to get to some stuff later talking about his eligibility. We got him for two. Automatically got him for 2 years. So it helps with depth. I think we all feel good about Jermaine Waller. I think we all feel good about Armani. I think we feel good about Brian Murray. Now we've like, hey, we were down one. Now we're back to where we're at the comfy level. So I love it. I love it.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think we're quite getting the top end that we would have had with Caleb, but we're definitely getting a guy that you can immediately put in the lineup and feel comfortable with.
That's awesome. All right, so let's move on. Couple guys this week got some rankings. Start with Bryce Goodner. Bryce Goodner gets an 86 from 247, 85-81 composite. He goes national. He is top 800. He is a top 50 guard. And he's moved into the top 25 of the state of Tennessee. Are you shocked by this, Brian?
Absolutely not. This is about where I think I had him plugged when we talked about him last taping. 86 is a good number for him. I feel really good about that. I had him somewhere between an 85 and an 87, so that's right in that range that I was looking at. And, you know, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a big impact guy, and he's going to be a guard for us. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with that position. I think I just saw someone mention that they started had their first game this week, and he's playing guard this year for his high school versus tackle that he played last year. So we'll get to see some more tape on him playing the position that he'll be playing for us now.
Absolutely. And it's good to hear that. So he's moved from that tackle into the guard. Remember in the interview with the Sun Saturday, he said Vice wants him at center. I know he mentioned he's taking snaps at practice and staying extra, but just getting inside, I think that helps him even more get acclimated to it. Now, Brian, another guy got a ranking too, and I believe you're probably going to be baffled by this one. Malachi Thomas, the Hart County running back. 86 for 247 with an 84.98 in the composite. Shocked?
Yeah, I'm not sure why his composite ends up being lower, because I want to say his two numbers from the other two publications are the same as what Goodner's was, and he's also getting the same 247 ranking, yet his composite is lower. But 247 probably has about a point or two lower than I would have liked to have seen. I could have seen him going as high as an 88 just based on the output that he's had and the dynamic abilities that he has, because he's definitely that all-purpose guy, but he's also a guy that can do things in the passing game. I would have liked to have seen a little bit higher number on there. That would have definitely helped us in terms of overall class ranking, but 86 is a good number, and considering he got, wasn't ranked a month ago, now all of a sudden – he's dropping an 86 on you. That's pretty good.
It is. And I think it kind of shocked some of us of that number because of his accolades.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not undersized. 6 foot, 180. That's a typical high school size running back. It's not like he's 5'7", 160 doing these numbers.
Yeah.
And I think the state of Georgia is playing like the state of Tennessee. So potentially he could get a nice bump. Now, from these guys bumping, we have ascended essentially in the composite rankings, which composite rankings. I don't really look at composite rankings.
Composite is what we're looking at for the class size, but yeah. If we're really looking at it, it'd be nice if we could get something better in the just looking at the 247, the ones in the square box there and not the big number.
Exactly. And that's the one I look at. The people look at the big number, the 39. We've broken the 40s. I look at the little number. We're at 34, and with some targets out there that probably can push us over into the top 30, maybe into the top 25, we shall see.
Yep.
So, again, folks who listen, if you look at 247, don't look at the big number. Look at the little number. We trust 247 more. They're constantly evaluating. They're constantly updating. ESPN sets theirs about 8 months in advance. They never change. They might rank someone if they commit somewhere. Similar with Rivals. 247 stays on the game. That's why they're the best in the business right now.
Yeah, 247, you're pretty much getting some sort of refresh every month or couple months down the road. Whereas, I mean, Rivals is going to, can go 6 months without really taking a really good evaluation, especially in this dead period where they haven't been able to do the camps like they normally do. Mm-hmm. And that's what they base a lot of their rankings on, is the camps.
Yep.
Rivals, especially this year, is even less trustworthy than they would be at another given time. And then ESPN is pretty much all about, who's offering these players, and that's what they base their rankings on.
Exactly. All right, let's move on. Brian, what the fuck is UNC doing?
Everything wrong.
Everything. Hey, first of all, I feel like I read somewhere, did they not test the kids as they were coming back onto campus? Did I read that right? They are not testing the students as they come back on campus, right?
That is correct. They suggested having a negative test to come on campus, but it was not a mandate.
So, you're idiots. That's one piece. At least the next thing you could do is when they get to campus, part of their get on campus is get your butt over here and take the test. We need to figure out if you're negative or positive.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech was doing that. The Lane Stadium thing. Oh, you're checking in today? Cool. Get moved in, go to Lane Stadium, walk in, get your test, and try to stay until you hear back from us. Yep. They're getting more and more clusters. They've already went online. Some kids are pushing back. Their kids were out there. You know, they said they were in at bars over in Raleigh. NC State's also went online only. And, you know, as much as you want to say, well, it's the kids' fault, they're idiots for doing that, they're 18 to 22-year-old kids, the administrations of those universities screwed the pooch.
Yeah.
Because here's what they're not giving those kids back. They're not giving them back that that housing money. They're not getting that back.
Nope.
And if I'm a kid, I'm almost going to be like, screw you guys, I'm staying here. Well, you have to move on campus. No, I'm not.
I have paid
you,
money.
You write me a check for $5,000, fuck you.
I have paid money. I have paid money. You will let me live here.
What are you going to do? You'll kick me out? Or we're requiring people to kick out? No, I wrote you a $5,000 check. You want to write me that check back? I will be more than glad to leave.
It's like, you know, you already played this shit last semester, and we get the mitigating circumstances, but you had 5 months to prepare for this one, Hoss.
Yep, exactly. All right, well, let's move on, because the NCAA, on my birthday.
Holy shit.
On my birthday, votes to grant the extra year of eligibility to all Division I fall athletes. So basically, wherever you are right now is where you get to be next year this time. There is so much to divulge on this, Brian. I have a feeling we had one of our guys out in the Twitter sphere reach out to us about doing an episode. I think we will be, because
there's a lot of pieces to this. I'm just going to say it right now. Like, from a moral perspective, it's the right call. But from a logistical perspective, holy shit, it's going to be a clusterfuck.
And do we trust anything the NCAA wants to do right now?
No, because the NCAA will mandate this and then be like, y'all figure this shit out. That's the problem. The problem isn't, again, from a moral perspective, it's a good move. Because you don't know what's going to happen this year. You go ahead before you even get to that step. You say, okay, well, here's the extra year of eligibility. But the problem is that the NCAA is not going to say, this is how it needs to be implemented with as minimal gray area as possible. You know that's not going to happen. You know they're going to say, conferences, figure it out. Have fun. You get in trouble if you figure it out wrong, but you get to figure it out.
You get to figure it out. Yeah, I have. It's just one of those, you just shake your head at, because you just don't know, you know, what in the world. Like, again, it's granted, it's fine, but it's already, there's not enough thought about. By all means, if they had done anything in the prior 5 months leading up to this season in mandates, we would probably be like, hey, yeah, they'll figure it out before probably the end of the season how it's going to be done. Zero confidence in that. No. Now, Brian, a few days before that, Mr. Blackshear got his waiver disproved.
Denied.
So wait a second. He can get an extra year. Again, the logistical stuff makes no sense, because you think, if this is what you're coming down with, why aren't you just holding all these guys' transfer waivers and just saying, basically, when we announce this, everybody can play this year. But
no. Why are you still punishing kids in a season you're saying doesn't count eligibility-wise anyway?
Exactly. It doesn't fucking count.
You know. Anyway, but, you know, that's the NCAA for us. And, I mean, at this point, you know, we've had three that we submitted initial waiver requests for. We've had two now, counting Blackshear, that we've submitted appeals for. Previously, Brock's was not approved, both initial and appeal. We'll see what comes out for Blackshear here with his appeal. Based on some of the word that we've received from a compliance side of things, it seems like this one is a little more straightforward in terms of what was needed for the appeal to be approved. So I think they feel confident in that. But at the same time, until it happens, I'm not going to give them anything because I have zero confidence in the NCAA approving it. And it, at this point, I don't know whether it's an issue with our compliance team being mom and pop versus having, you know, big time lawyers up on this thing or whatever it is. But the NCAA just does not like us for one reason or another. What's your take on that, man?
This is what we have to figure out, but we have to just speculate the hell out of. Either they hate us, or again, you said it, is our compliance team mom and pops that simply can't do this legal work right to make this smooth as possible. Now, clearly, I think it's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Because if we were screwing up things really bad, I don't think the grad transfers would be getting immediate approval. I think there would be something behind that, but they seem to go through pretty quick.
Unless they have C minuses.
Hey, that's the academic side. Don't get on compliance for that. We can talk to the academic people about that.
I'm just throwing that out there, man. Sorry.
Jesus. But it's like you see this happen and it's like, okay, you have your compliance team. Okay. If you guys don't feel comfortable doing this, do we go to someone else? Do we have outside legal counsel?
Yes.
We should. Keep them on retainer. Fill it out in-house. Say, please look over this document. You save yourself money that way by not letting them do all of the fiscal paperwork. But they can look at it and say, here's your four screw-ups. Fix that. Get it back to me. I'll check it and then run it through. But again, it goes back to what we've heard. A lot of stuff around. The internal workings is very mom and pop. You got to get big boy. You got to get big boy on this because when you have kids of Raheem Blackshear's skill sets, when you have kids that want to play for you and you can't get them on the field immediately, it deters. It deters. You could have some kid at one of the blue bloods that's not getting playing time and saying, my skill set fits what they do. I want to go down there and I'll find a reason. I mean, hell, they're finding reasons for Tua's little brother to get.
You've got QB next to your name, it's an automatic.
You're automatic. JT Daniels moved from California to Georgia, and he got immediate approval. I'd like to see those waiver transcripts. I don't know if we can get that. Probably not. It's probably some legal shit, but you can't. But, like, seriously, it's really irritating.
There's got to be some sort of – I mean, I feel like we need to move forward and get some of our guys – hey, you know, I know you don't want to see some of these things, but, you know, redact everything that needs to be redacted and say, like, here's an example of what is needed to get an approval and kind of at least share that information. I mean, you can redact this information. I mean, I know there's some degree where, you know, if there's a specific scenario, you'll know who it is. But if you redact enough information, you can be like, okay, well, this is how they got that approved. Start sharing that information because I feel like there's at least UVA's even having some of these problems. There's definitely some confusion as to what is needed to get these things approved.
If you have the state of Virginia next to your name, we're not giving you approval. We're just not. Because theirs was also theirs was the Hopewell kid, right?
Yeah.
Coming out of Indiana. Wait a second. He's now an hour and 10 minutes from home. I don't think it's 100 miles between Charlottesville and Hopewell.
It is not.
Jesus Christ. All right, who knows? All right, let's move on, guys. We got even more to go through here. We've had the food press conference where he said some things. We want to hit some pieces on that. Now, let's start with essentially this, Brian, on it. As of this is when there have been four practices. There have been more since then.
Yep.
Probably one of the biggest things that came out of this, at least for us, was no additional opt-outs as of that press conference, and as of today, I have not seen anything.
Yeah, we are officially through the camp portion of the fall camp getting ready for the season. So at this point, there have been no additional opt-outs, and that's a good thing because at this point, we know pretty much unless something funky happens or things take a turn in terms of the number of cases on campus or something like that, these kids seem to be locked in and ready to go for the season.
Yeah, he did mention there were some conversations that were had. You know, actually getting that out of Fuente seems almost like a miracle because usually he doesn't divulge that type of stuff. But he said there were conversations had. So clearly there were some concerns with guys or maybe just guys questioning things. But as of today, no additional opt-outs. Now, what has happened is they've had conversation on the red shirts, but as of that time, no decisions yet. But now with the NCAA saying what they're playing, is it just screw it, just play them?
Yeah, at this point, you might as well play them because they're getting this year, this extra year of eligibility anyway. Everyone is going to roll into next year as whatever their current standing is, which is going to be really strange and hard to wrap our heads around. But again, that's a logistical nightmare to sort out later. So, yeah, if I'm Coach Fuente, I'm definitely – if I need to play a guy, I'm playing a guy. And if I have a scenario where I can get guys extra reps, I'm getting them extra reps.
Hell yeah. That's the biggie right there. It's getting some of those young guys on the field when possible. And I don't care if it's on special teams or situational stuff, but getting them used to the speed of the game where we know it's very tough. Now, everybody else can do this too. But for us having – this was a smaller class. It makes it easier for us. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
We got 14 guys to get on the field. I think they can get them all on the field in some way, shape, or form, which is great to know. Now, something else that was talked about was how practices are going with all the COVID stuff. And, you know, Coach Winton mentioned, like, wearing face shields, and it seems like they're trying to make the drills, the movements quicker and the quick drills, trying to avoid a lot of facing time, so a lot of constant movement. Brian, from someone, you know, who went through this, you know, multiple times at a collegiate level, how much of a pain could that be? Because you guys are creatures of habit.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is going to be in any of those down periods, just making sure that you're doing the right thing. Obviously, when a coach is engaged, a lot of times it's easier to kind of keep in that mindset. But I think, like, for example, if there's special teams period and, you know, you're not in the group and you're with a certain unit, keeping in mind, I need to keep social distance from these group, you know, when I'm not engaged in practice or engaged in a specific drill. So I think that's going to be the bigger thing. And I think what he said and what I kind of took away from it is that he's like, you know, everybody is a stakeholder, whether it be, you know, trainers on the field, you know, whoever is there needs to be a stakeholder in this thing and holding people accountable. And I think that's going to be the key thing is that, you know, you see something that people need to be more aware of, go ahead and speak up, make it known. He said, you talked about blowing the whistle and getting distance when necessary. So, you know, it looks like everybody is taking ownership in this and he's given people license to, hey, if you see somebody doing something that's not within our protocols, go ahead and say something and let's keep this thing moving.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's good to hear about the whistles and you hear about things like that. But the one thing that really caught my ear earlier this week was James Mitchell, Divine Diablo. Man, if you saw some of their quotes, it sounds like the older guys were busting heads almost to the younger guys.
Yeah, and that's even more special for Mitchell since Mitchell still got some eligibility left. And obviously Diablo being a big leader on the field for us. You know, those two guys, and along with Trey Turner, kind of seem to be, you know, some of the big three in terms of vocal leadership. Yeah. I definitely think Rook is more of a leader by example. He leads by how he plays on the field. But those three seem to be more of the vocal leaders, and it's nice to see them stepping up and saying, hey, this is important to us. We need to do the right thing so we can play and show what we're made of and take care of our business in the fall.
Absolutely. The best line, the best quote is, the upperclassmen tried to let the younger guys know that there will be some type of discipline if they do not follow the rules. It was players who made that rule, not even the coaches. If you want to be here, you have to be in here 100%. And so, yeah, I think the leadership of this team is just shining through on so many different levels, which is maybe the last couple seasons, maybe that's what was missing compared to the first two seasons when you had, you know, 16 with Isaiah and, you know, Evans coming in as a junior. And then the next season, you know, Tremaine and Ricky Walker, you know, but now you've got all these guys are grown up and now they're the leaders of this team and they're the dogs who, when they bark, the rest of the team listens.
Yeah, it's definitely been nice seeing these guys really grow into these roles because we did see, you know, the downside of not having more than one or two guys in the locker room that were leaders. And even in, like, you know, in 18, I mean, we had some leaders on the team, but I don't think they were as vocal as this group that we have now. So, you know, there were fewer of them and it just wasn't quite there. And it feels like now you've got guys that they played the snaps, they've put in the work, but they also know how to talk and how to communicate with the team and, you know, let them know, you know, what it is to be a Hokie and what we need to do to get the job done.
Absolutely. Now, something else, Coach Fuente was questioned about Justin Hamilton, and it seemed like he gave him some rave reviews.
Yeah, big time. You know, called him the ultimate communicator, said that he was such a strong leader and that he brings a lot of energy and that kind of trickles down to the other guys on that defensive staff. And it's nice to see that, you know, it seems like he is also taking the input from some of the guys that are more veteran, that are, you know, at the other positions, but still being able to be the guy at the top that really filters those points of view and then puts it into a plan.
Absolutely. You hear so much about him, but, you know, you hear about natural leader and the communicator. And, you know, somebody I know that is pretty close to the program, they talk about him on the sidelines and how he connects with his players. And sometimes that's what you need. You need that connection. I mean, Justin Hamilton's our age. He's in his mid-late 30s. First of all, that's incredibly young. But when you have guys that young, it's easier for them because the generational gap isn't that big. And you talk about communicator. We've talked about him in the past. The guy played three different positions in collegiate football. I think he'll know how to communicate and tell guys things just because of having that sort of background, you know, on his belt to say, I didn't play one. I played three positions. Two were on offense. Yeah. I excelled on defense and I got drafted on defense. So gets a little weight there. Brian, you tweeted me this text that was big C-Dog feeling it this week.
Yeah, man. it sounds like some of the practices that they've been having have felt a little different this go round. And, you know, we were talking about it and kicking it back and forth. And I mean, you know, I'm sure it's twofold. I'm sure it's number one, a lot less work leading up into it. What in terms of group work, in terms of working those specific type of football things, with the training staff and with the strength and conditioning staff there, you know, leading up to the start of the season. You know, but also there's a lot happening in these practices. You're talking about installs of new defense. You're talking about, you know, probably opening up the playbook a little bit more on offense since you've got a returning signal caller and two other guys that have already been in the program, one for, you know, having a full off season and the other for multiple years. So I think they're probably opening the playbook a little bit more in terms of what they're installing during camp and installing ahead of the NC State game. And they're probably doing a little more conditioning than they would do in a typical fall camp, just to get these guys back into that playing shape, because there wasn't as much monitored time in the off season this year.
Yep. I think that's exactly what it is. We kind of mentioned they missed the spring practice. And then the next thing that goes on is they're missing that summer. And I know they came back in June, but it was different. They couldn't quite get in the gym. They had to be in the Beamer Barn under some very different type workout conditions. So, yes, some people can say, well, they've had more time, but it's like it's different. It's not their typical – they're out of their element. Yeah. It's usually, you know, we talked about it. Come out from January, go into February, you have those hard conditioning workouts, you have a little break, spring ball. Then you have a little bit of break after spring ball, slowly building up your conditioning as you get into fall camp.
Yep.
They didn't have that this year. They essentially, from, you know, March up until late part of June, weren't there. And some of the guys weren't able to get back to campus until July. So really, they missed, you can say, 2 months to keep themselves in shape. And don't get me wrong, you can see these guys working out at home, but it's still a little bit different. And thank goodness.
Exactly. And like you said, some of those guys, what, 3 weeks maybe before they started fall camp on campus?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's good enough to get kind of shake the rust off, but it's not enough to get in playing shape using a specific type of equipment, doing specific workouts, getting pushed by your teammates, getting pushed by the strength and conditioning coaches. So, you know, that's definitely completely different. I mean, I know certain people can handle working out on their own and get the same amount out of it, but that's not going to be everybody.
Exactly. Something else Coach mentioned was talking about how Evan Fairs, Changa Hodges were needed to shore up this wide receiver room. We saw Changa finally on the field today, which is awesome. Which is good. I mean, you know, again, we are a little thin at wide receiver. I think having these two guys, I don't feel as worried anymore, Brian. I feel like we have, again, four guys who've played at collegiate level, who've had some success. Fairs has been nicked up, but you see, you know he can play.
Yeah, and I think the big thing with Hodges in now is that regardless of what happens with the Blackshear situation, you've got another guy that you can count on in your first three or four guys that you could roll out there. Because I feel like Blackshear was definitely going to be one of the first four guys that they were sending out there in wide receiver playing from the slot. So I think that's going to help with that situation. And Fairs kind of takes some of those, those red zone issues that we would have as far as a big target, losing out on a Hazleton and losing out on Phil Patterson, because those two guys were definitely more of the guys we were throwing fades to inside the 10.
Exactly. Production, it eases it up, whether it happens with Blackshear or not. And hey, they can be on the team next year.
Yeah, exactly. And and then, you know, adding to that, we talk about Paiute's progress. Oh, and that's a big thing that Coach Fuente was talking about during the press conference, was how much he's went from a guy that's athletic, you know, great athlete, but now a guy that looks like a wide receiver.
Exactly. He said leaps and bounds. Even without this spring, which A, pisses you off, because if he gets those reps in spring, who knows where he is physically. Holy crap. Those pictures that Hokie Sports put out, he looked like a man.
Yeah. It's funny. Coach Fuente said he was dealing with allergies when he first came on campus last year. And funny enough, that was actually something I dealt with my first year at Hampton-Sydney. So I kind of know what he's talking about there. Like, when they hit hard, especially with getting pushed further than you're kind of used to at a high school level, it kind of kicks your ass a little bit from a conditioning perspective. So I definitely understand where he was coming from with that, because it definitely takes a little more time to get, where you need to be, especially for a guy like him that relies on his athleticism as part of his game. So seeing him get that under control and now learning the wide receiver position and being able to translate his athleticism into, a position specific role on the team, I think that's going to be big for us. And, hopefully we see a lot of him this fall, now that there's some other opportunities at wide receiver for him to step in there.
Yep. And we'll get to some of that later. We're going to get a few more impressions on a couple guys throughout this, but we want to kind of hit everybody real quick here. The next one he discussed, the running back group, he said it straight up. He has an experienced group. The freshmen are learning. He did mention Wheatley was dealing with a hamstring injury. As loaded as this room is, just with the number of bodies, that's not good for him. But then he, and this is what kind of breaks your heart with the Raheem stuff. And again, we know Fu is close to the vest. Basically, Fu said he has been absolutely remarkable, awesome, and multidimensional through the first four practices.
Ouch.
And
I mean, we've talked about it, though. We looked at his tape and we said that's what he was going to be. So it doesn't surprise me that he said that. It nope. just it sucks that given what came down from the NCAA, at least to this point, could potentially put the kibosh on him playing this year, despite the fact that he's not only an amazing talent, which we knew he was, but is fitting into what we're trying to do as an offense already.
There's a reason he chose us. There's a reason he chose us, because and I'm sure he was looked at by a lot of people just because of his production, but there's a reason he chose us. Now, Brian, the other transfer, Khalil Herbert, looks like he's also just like he's the man already. So, you know, looking like he's the lead back. And for us, we like to see that because now we can say, okay, we've got our 1-1 true running back, you know, which is awesome. I have a feeling you as an offensive lineman, knowing you got that guy back there, it makes you even more excited to get out there and find somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. If you got a guy that you know you can rely on to get those extra yards, run through some tackles, you know, with the ability to also, once you get out in the open, run away from guys, you know, that makes you want to go out there and get everybody that you can, because sometimes, you know, it only takes one block. It only takes one block to open up something big for a running back like him. So, you know, that definitely pushes you harder. And, you know, I like what I saw on his tape when he was coming in, and it sounds like he's really translated that into our offense and had some success in camp so far. So that's going to be interesting to watch and see, you know, if he's going to be really, I mean, the first kind of lead back we've had since David Wilson, you know, left us for the NFL. I mean, I'm not saying we're talking about that degree of talent, but that's the last time we've had a running back that said, give me the rock every time you can.
Exactly. All right, we move on from transfers to one of the more highly touted recruits. You mentioned Devin Hunter. And first of all, Brian, let's address this. We no longer have a rover.
The position is no longer called rover. It is now boundary safety. So if anyone's looking to do a spinoff podcast, you've got a name.
You do have a name now. but such high praise of you know, Devin talking about his leadership, talking about he wants success. He has great work ethic, great attitude. And, you know, you feel Devin's built to play that boundary safety position, strong safety. You know he's near the box. And you just hope that he can excel because he's the guy that said, yep, I'll take a red shirt. Yep, I'll continue to grow. I'll continue to learn. I'll continue to sit behind somebody instead of just saying, okay, I'm out of here.
He said yes a lot of times to not getting playing time right away. And for a guy that was as highly touted as he was coming out of the 757, that's been a big thing for us. Yep. Because he's shown leadership, he's shown selflessness, and he's shown work ethic. So, I mean, there's nothing more you can ask for the guy. And, it, you know, we got to see it a little bit in spots last year when he finally got some significant playing time in some games. And we're hoping that he can put it all together, you know, as the guy at that position this year. But in terms of leadership and work ethic and being a guy that's team first, I mean, we can't ask for anybody better.
Absolutely. And I hope that he can have the success this year because of all that. Brian, when the question was asked, I can't remember who asked, or I'd give them credit right now, but the individual who asked who has the strongest unit, were you shocked by his answer of offensive line?
I was not, because I already knew that we had about seven or eight guys that could potentially be starters, and not just starters, but good starters this year. You know, he talked about how, you know, Nestor looks like a grown man now. You're talking about a guy that started as a true freshman and probably was a little bit undersized to step into that role, but did pretty well with it last year, and he's filled out some. So that's going to be, you know, nothing but a good thing. They talked about Luke Tenuta has filled out. He's what do you say? No longer looks like a basketball player or something like that.
Baseball player. He said he
baseball player.
Like a baseball player. I'm assuming
he's no longer looks like a baseball player.
Than that, and basically he just said in general the young guys just don't look young anymore.
Yeah, so he doesn't look like Randy Johnson anymore. So
exactly, and that's great to hear because that means that they put on the pounds and they played hard. I know a couple things that I kind of caught interesting was. Other than Christian Darrisaw and Luke Tenuta, they're the only two guys that have not moved. Everybody else has been moving around, which I think might shock some people, especially the way Hudson played at center last year, especially the way Nestor played at guard. But we go back to John's interview with us, man.
Yeah. This is what Vice likes. Vice wants the best five out there, and he will continue shuffling until he finds a group that he likes. And I think based on Tenuta's body and how he really took to the tackle position right out the gate, that gave him more of a locked-in spot. And then obviously, you know, Christian being Christian and being – really locked into that position now for several years, that kind of locked him in. I think the one that probably surprised me the most was the fact that they are still moving Lasita Smith around a little bit. But, you know, I think he's going to still end up at left guard. I think the question is going to be, is Brock going to be guard or center? And based on that, is Hudson going to be center or is Nestor going to be guard or is Hudson going to be guard?
But does that matter now? Because the one thing me and you had discussed, I can't remember if we discussed it on here, but we discussed offline was, man, we might need to redshirt Nestor. He is a tackle. It doesn't matter anymore. Dude.
It doesn't.
If Doug Nestor's better than Lytikus, let him play left guard. If Hud is better at right guard, let him play right guard. Put Brock at center. You're not losing it. For us as a team, this doesn't hurt us as much. I feel like this can hurt Blue Bloods more. It's going to hurt us because Blue Bloods are expecting guys to move on. You know, a guy who gets a seventh round grade from Alabama would just say, hey, I'll move on. I'll get picked up just because of I'm at Alabama.
Yeah. For
us, it's not like that. And to me, man, you love this year in the depth. Man, next year it could just be the plethora of we could feel like one of those teams that has so much depth it's not funny. Where it's like, how do we play everybody?
It's true. It's true. And you know, it's a good problem to have. I'd rather have so much talent that, you know, guys maybe have to look at transferring than not having enough. So it is what it is. I mean, you know, Doug Nestor, I think, you know, he could play guard. I think he could eventually play right or left tackle as well, especially being, you know, 6'6". So he's got the height. He's got the weight now coming in around 315. So, you know, I think there's some options here with our offensive line, especially, you know, once we see what Darrisaw decides to do after this year, if he's going to come back for another year.
Yeah.
And you know what some of these seniors decide to do now that they've been granted a free year of eligibility.
It's going to be very interesting. Also, one last quick snippet on the offensive line. Parker has been at tackle, Caden Moore at guard. I don't think that shocks anybody. But in case you guys didn't get to see it or read on it, this is where they are. All right. First of all, big shout out here. To TNT Tap on Twitter. You got shouted out by Coach, basically talking about them as cartoon characters and then discussing their working relationship that they've established and how they essentially are learning from one another, getting better. He feels like Bill's one of the best established defensive line coaches in any form of football. I think you definitely agree with that, Brian, and he feels Daryl's going to be right behind him in that place. And it's iron sharpening iron. And I think, you know, you saw some of that video, Brian, and I think that made you, and you've seen some stuff in the past, and made you think some different things about what we're going to be doing on the defensive line.
Yeah, it's big time. And I, like you said, I think the big thing is that I think they're going to be good complements for one another because they bring slightly different things to the table, but those things are complementary of one another. They're kind of like puzzle pieces fitting together. Like whatever one doesn't have, the other can bring to the table. Yeah, Tapp obviously bringing the work ethic, the NFL pedigree, and just a guy that can really bring practice up and get people hype. And then Bill's more of the guy that, you know, he knows his shit. He is the guy that can run the drills. He's the guy that can push you harder because he knows the technique, can teach the technique. So, I mean, I think we're going to see some big things. You know, we saw from some of the tape from camp, what they're doing with the defensive line is going to be different. You know, we're no longer, you're going to be looking for a lot more, action out of the defensive lineman than we were typically used to. So I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of defensive line, one guy they're getting to work with, and it's been kind of confirmed, Mari Barno has moved to defensive end, which I know you're jacked about. A lot of the Hokie Nation's jacked about. Hardworking kid. He's so well liked, and he wants success at this position. And the way he's built, you know, and you know, things he's done in his past, you know, you mentioned, like, if you want him on the field a lot, this is what you've got to do. You've got a really good linebacker to go. Not to say he couldn't make a great linebacker, like backer, but, you know, get him out there as much as you can and don't hinder him.
Yeah, I mean, because of the situation that we're working with Rook just standing out so much, you already got Dax and Tiz working at backer. It was going to be hard for him to find a significant amount of snaps. But with his build, you know, if you can teach him to put his hand in the dirt and rush the passer, he's going to be a force because he's got the size and speed to cause a lot of problems.
Absolutely. And, you know, you hear about from the Fuente presser just talking about, you know, they put it on him. They asked, listened for different options. He wanted to talk to his parents, and he got back and he was ready to make the move. And this is per the coach, and, you know, he's taking big steps every day. And I think having Daryl Tapp, I think having Bill Cherelnik there, I think that is a big reason why they get to work with a 6'6", 240-pound defensive end. That is a prototype. That is a prototype. And since he hasn't played there in a while, he's almost the blank canvas, and they get to paint it.
He's the blank canvas, but he's also a guy because he's been in a Division I system, and whether it's weight room and things like that, he understands the process and he's got the body. He just needs to have that those lessons taught and those technique taught. And I think once he gets the technique down and once he gets you know, some of those other lessons down and learns the position, he's going to be trouble. I don't know if he's going to be a guy that's going to crack the one deep, but he's definitely going to be a guy we're going to see in certain situations, and he's definitely going to be a rotational player just because somebody with that size and speed can impact plays.
All right. Hey, Brian, let's clarify this. Justin Fuente has no interest in the commissioner job.
Good to know. I did not want him to take it.
Oh, you shocked by that? No. All right. Next thing that they kind of hit, and this is kind of going to be just kind of interesting because, again, it peels back the layer a little bit. They asked about how it scouts for a different schedule. And, you know, you were listening to it, Brian. Basically, during the offseason, they sort of start doing some in-depth prep for the first 3 to 4 opponents.
Yeah.
And then they do one other complete breakdown of a team. Yeah. I'm guessing that's something inside coaching you just do to say, we know we're playing these guys. Let's look at these guys so we can maybe have some comparisons of what we see
Yeah, and he didn't say if that was randomized or if he picked it based on a certain scheme they run or if he picked it based on the level of talent they have. He didn't say that, but he said that's one of the, you know, it's three opponents plus one and probably not one of the other OOCs, so probably one conference game on top of whoever the first three opponents are.
Yeah, and he mentioned he said they didn't – things change in camp. They do it again, but they do it before camp as well. So now it's completely different. It's in, they're the NC State's the opener, not Liberty. So, you know, luckily they get a few extra weeks there to prep for it. But it sounds like they already have some things installed that they do. Now, what really stinks is if you look at through the first three of the four opponents, we're only playing, what, one of them? Yeah. Good exercise, guys. Now we have to throw it all
away and do it. Now let's trash that and let's figure out something else. So
keep the Liberty notes. Keep the Liberty notes. Don't trash those. But now we've got to do a couple more. But again, something again pulling the curtain back just a little bit for us, man. All right, so let's hit a couple things, Brian. Just overall impressions, things we're seeing, pictures, tweets, things like that. You know, we've already mentioned Piyut's been impressing. And this is my thought of why that kid needs to be on the field. Brian, do you know or did you know that he runs a 10.6 700 meters?
I do now.
First of all, that's insanely fast.
Yeah.
For someone who's not going to be essentially a track athlete. I feel like Cole Beck ran like a 10.3 last year, and Cole Beck potentially could be on an Olympic team as one of the relay 100 meter guys.
Yep.
You convert a 10.67 to football type speed, that's legit 4.4, potentially high 4.3s. Brian, if nothing else, can we just put that man on the field side and just say, run as fast as you can, as deep as you can. If Hendon feels like you beat your guy, let him get it to you.
See a team running a lot of man, put him in the slot and run him up the seam.
Just seam it. Try to let him get by the safety. See, I want on the outside because I think with James Mitchell and some of the other guys, let them feast on the middle because once he beats somebody over the top once, that safety's going to shift towards him every time.
Yep.
What else do you think about Piyut?
So what I'm liking is that, you know, we've talked about it a little bit already, but you know, he's definitely filled out. So he looks like a power five wide receiver now. He's learned the position. He knows the route tree a lot better than he did a year ago. It sounds like he's kind of the guy that is looking to take a big step from a guy you didn't even see on the field to a guy that you could be talking about at the end of each game. So that's an impressive step for a guy that mostly played quarterback in high school.
Absolutely.
And I like, you know, what we've heard from some of the younger wide receivers as well. Some of the incoming freshmen like Dalen Wright and Tyree Saunders.
Yep.
It sounds like, you know, if we didn't have, you know, Piyut stepping up and we didn't have, you know, guys like Fares and Hodges coming in from the transfer portal, that these guys might have saw some significant playing time come this fall. And they might still see some of that now that you're pretty much – you know, you don't have to redshirt anybody this year with those new NCAA rules. So yeah. That's impressive for them. And those are two guys that I thought could, you know, really crack in and make some impact early. And I'm glad to see that they really put that to fruition.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you hope for those two guys, they get a ton of special teams times. I'm really hoping now that this eligibility rule is out there that James Shybest kind of figures a way to get some of the young guys that could be the potential future starters on the field because get them acclimated to that game speed. We've already talked about Amari. We think that move is great. So many opportunities for him. I told you I'd love to see a Lamborghini package. You know, let him go out there, put Justice Reed inside with Mr. Pollard. And, you know, maybe put another one of those, you know, let somebody else have the other side and just let's go kill a quarterback. Okay.
I
like that.
I could definitely see that happening. I would like to see that as well. You know, I think we've got some other guys that can we could mix and match and put some of those packages together, especially when we get when we either get a team down or if we get a team in an obvious passing situation. Throw something out there like that. I'm not, you know, we don't know. We know tendencies of Bud Foster, but we don't know Jay Ham's tendencies yet. So right now we can speculate and it's fun. And I kind of like that a little bit because, you know, it gives us a little bit more to talk about and see if some of the things that we're thinking in our head end up happening on the field.
Absolutely. All right, Brian, let me ask this. We go to the first play against NC State offensively. Blackshear got his waiver. Tell me what you want that look to be. Tell me what would be like the one where if you got in at NC State, may be like, oh, God, how do we defend this?
Oh, man. Putting me on the spot here.
Yeah, I got to. Man. Because Blackshear's that weapon where it's like, you know what? We're going to go pistol set, two back, Blackshear on Leo on the right. Big Stone over in the H-back spot, putting Jaden at the X and putting Trey at the Y. I'm leaving Tavon Robinson completely off the field, which is like, Jesus Christ. What would be that set that would just basically make them go, this is not going to be a fun day for us?
Oh, man. Let's see. I'm going to go 21 personnel. So we got Khalil Herbert and Blackshear on the field. We're going to motion Blackshear into the slot, and then we're going to throw a tunnel screen to Blackshear.
I hear you. Oh, you're already calling first play, man. Just a little tunnel to make them think about. Come back second play. Let's run a sweep out of that. Run a jet sweep out of that.
You can run a jet sweep out of that. I mean, I think we're going to run a lot more 21 personnel if Blackshear gets a waiver, just because – we can motion him into the backfield, give him the ball, run the jet sweep with him, throw him the ball in the slot, throw him screens. I mean, there's just so much of the playbook that gets opened by having a guy like that on the field because he can really do everything but throw the ball.
Heck, Mike can throw the ball. Don't be shocked.
Yeah.
All right. Brian, is there – I'm not even going to put the conference, Brian. You got to note it on your conference. Is this the best quarterback room in the country?
Yes.
Yeah.
I say this.
We're there, biased,
there might be, I don't know, maybe Uga. But definitely, if you just talk in the conference, I have no doubt about what we bring to the table as a quarterback room. So, by all accounts, Hooker's looking good in practice. Burmeister's tearing it up pretty good. QP looks completely yoked. He looks like a tight end.
He looks huge.
But he can sling it. So definitely best quarterback room in the conference, potentially best quarterback room in the country. Uga's probably the only one I would maybe even think would be in that conversation that I can think of off the top of my head. I mean, you might be able to think of another one.
I really can't. I really can't because most is when you get into the third is an unproven guy.
Yeah.
They might be highly touted, but they're usually unproven. And in this case, it's not. All three guys have played and won at Division I level. All three have had success. And usually you don't see that. So that's what makes the difference. Usually if you say 1 and 2 is down, all right, well, hey, we've got a 5-star freshman. We can throw him out there. He'll probably do okay. But it's still a dice roll.
Yeah.
So for me, that's why it's, you know, three guys get to game plan with each one a little something different. And if something happens, you hey, go do your thing.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, and like I said, the fact that all three of them bring something a little different to the table is also key. You know, Hooker's definitely the best all around, I think, between combining ability to make plays with legs, good arm, can throw the deep ball, accuracy. You know, Burmeister's a guy with some really good athleticism. that can also, you know, sling it downfield a little bit. And then, you know, QP is a guy that, you know, can run those quarterback powers, can, you know, really make guys think about short yardage. And
he's got a gun.
He's got a gun. He's got a gun. He can get the damn ball down the field. Yes. So all of those things, you know, complement each other in a lot of ways, with Hooker being the guy that does more things better, essentially.
Yep. More things better, more composed, very, very risk adverse.
Yeah.
Doesn't turn the ball over.
He's also got those eyes of a guy that knows, you know, isn't fazed by what comes at him during a game. Like, you look at his eyes, he always looks locked in. Like, there's not a lot that phases him, good or bad.
Absolutely, man. All right, you made note here, and we've mentioned it earlier. This offensive line, these are really good players. Probably, man, Brian, I feel like this might be the best offensive line in, you know, maybe since the Jake Grove lines, maybe since the Dwayne Brown line. So 17 years.
Definitely the best combination of talent and experience that we've had a good long while.
And we're deep.
Yeah.
Tell me just what you're getting, what you're feeling, what you're hearing. Who do you think's our five? That first play. Now, we with Vice, we feel like he's probably going to – everybody's going to play at some point. But if you think this is how we're going to roll against NC State, what do you think it's going to look like? And, you know, and who's your – I'll let you go seven. I'll let you cheat a little bit. Like, these are the next two guys in that'll be immediately rotated in.
All right. So, let's see here. Obviously, we're going with Darisaw at left. Definitely think Lasitas is going to be locked in at left guard.
Okay.
And I think Tenuta is going to win the battle at right tackle.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Let's do the easy ones, why don't you?
I think Brock is going to end up slotting at center, just based on what I'm hearing from camp. Yeah. And I think that you're probably going to look at Nestor at guard, with Hudson and Silas being the two swing guys.
I think you're right about that, and I think that's the exact combo too. I think as good as Hudson is at center, Brock almost seems like he has been the leader of those guys, and it makes it easy with Brock, because Brock can play left, he can play center, he can play right guard, and he's even spent some time at tackle. So if you're talking about, oh, let's mix it up, well, it's easy to, hey, we're gonna take Doug out this series and put in Hud, or, you know, we're gonna let Brock take out this series and put in Hud, we'll move Brock to right, we'll move Doug to left. I think that's the seven, and that's no knock to some of the other guys, man. Again, I've told you, I'd love to see us, when we get up like 14 on the team, mid fourth quarter, 7.5 minutes left, Fuente just like running, we're going to run seven offensive linemen out there with Quincy and like Marco Lee or Jalen Holston, just like, we're just going to run power right at you.
Boom.
You're not, by the third time, you're not
tackle eligible. Tackle eligible.
There will be no throws, though. It's like, just fire off the ball, find somebody, and slam them down. So, yeah, that's my dream. And I'm sure most offensive linemen, that's their dream, to put seven offensive linemen on the field.
Oh, yeah, you get up late and just throw seven out there and just pound them into submission.
That's like some crap you do on Madden or the old college football games, where it's like, let me see. I'm going to put you here. I'm going to put you here. And I'm just going to run off tackle.
Yep.
And you see them in
package substitution. Put the tackles at the tight end and let's roll.
Let's roll. And then it's like, we're going to run. We're going to run off tackle. So wait a second. Wait a minute. They're in. What? This isn't fair to those poor defensive backs. They're about to get smashed. Yep.
And then the computer's dumb enough to be like accidentally running nickel one play, and they just get completely annihilated.
They have like three injured defensive backs on one play. Love it. All right. So we went through a lot here, guys. a lot of our perspectives, Coach Fuentes. So this is what we want to ask. Which fresh face do you think is going to provide the most impact this year? Brian, who do you think?
Are we pretending that the waiver doesn't get approved, or are we saying we can put Blackshear in this puzzle?
You can put Blackshear in the puzzle.
Blackshear.
I'm shocked. Not that shocked. You've loved that guy since our first episode.
Yep.
I'm going to go a little different. Blackshear's big. I think Jaden is the guy.
Okay.
Since Coach Fuente has been here, he has not had somebody with that type of a lead speed on the outside. And you've talked about a lot of the stuff Fuente and Cornelison like to do. If you have that one guy that can take two guys with them out of the box, you think of the space for Blackshear. You think of the space for Trey Turner. You think of seam routes for James Mitchell. You think of lanes for Herbert. You think of running lanes for Hooker. I think if it's just that post and getting him on some screens to use that athletic ability, I think this offense, which it's admitted, let's admit it, that anybody wants to come out there and go hard at Fuente's crew, our offense has not been bad.
No.
Has not been bad since he stepped on campus.
And it's especially if you just look at the Hooker games from last year, it was pretty damn good.
It was damn good against some damn good defenses at that. So I feel like he's the guy that if that fresh face could provide the most impact, and I think he will, because I think you put him out there, the scouting reports are going to say on him, he's freaking fast.
Yep.
You're going to see that free safety. He's not going to be 10 yards. He's going to be 20, because he knows if, you know, my left cornerback gets beat and I'm not 20 yards back and they put it on the money, it's a house call.
Yep. Yep. And this is no disrespect to guys like, you know, Herbert or Barno that are potentially going to see some big impact this year as well. So,
Barno, to Hoffman, to all these guys, to Changa Hodges coming in, even to Devin Taylor, who we mentioned. It's no disrespect to them, but we just kind of – you see Blackshear as I see Jaden. You see them that if we get the ball with things we do on our offense, how they can affect the game, it goes us from being where we've been last few years, somewhere between about 60 and 35, to potentially being a top 20, top 15 offense.
Yeah.
And if that happens, watch out.
I think the difference between our picks is that I see how Blackshear can directly impact things, and you see how if Payo can do these couple things really well, how much it'll open up everything else in the offense. I think that's really the two differences between our picks there.
Exactly. All right, so that is going to wrap up this episode of the Boundary Corner Podcast. My name is Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler.
Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite source, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. As always, we let our buddy Jason Long play us out. Catch him on Spotify and Apple Music. Thank you always for listening. And as always, let's go.
Hokies.